Hi, this is Jeff Robinson. I'm with Castle Hill Cider in Charlottesville, Virginia, and this is Cider Chat.
Episode 11. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. This is Rio in Color, your cider MC. And thank you for coming along on this a little drive into Ciderville as we will be heading down to Virginia, the great state of Virginia, and finding out a little bit about their cider making down there. It is a burgeoning, up-and-coming, currently happening cider place. And, you know, there's certain regions right now in the U.S. where that's really quite exciting. Most definitely New England, and certainly the Northwest, and as you go down the Pacific Coast. The Michigan cider makers would be upset if I don't mention them. I could go to Ohio. I mean, there's Alaska now. Whew. And I'm sure wherever you're growing apples, or you could get apples, or you have the desire to make cider, we're going to be seeing that happening. And these will be like little epicenters. And Virginia is really a hot spot. So we'll be going down to Castle Hill and talking with Jeff Richardson in just a wee bit about a particular style of cider making that is not being done, as far as I know, anywhere else in the world. Certainly they're using it as a winemaking technique, but not with cider. So have I piqued your interest yet? I certainly hope so. Oh, yeah. So before we go to Castle Hill, and I'll talk a little bit more about the interview, I just want to welcome, I just want to welcome you to get involved with Cider Chat and get some cider swag. And it's a really easy way to do that. All you need to do is to go to iTunes and leave a review and rating. Now, I know a lot of cider folks, cider makers, you know, they're farmers, they're orchardists. That doesn't mean that we're not like tech savvy, right? So it doesn't take too much a tech skill. All you have to do is just go to the detail button on iTunes and hit review and rating, and you can make a little title, hopefully excellent podcast for cider people, and just a couple words or a sentence. Don't be shy. Leave a 5-star review and rating, and then take a screenshot. The easy way to do that on my iPhone is I just push down that little home button down at the bottom, squeeze a little side button, and voila, you get a screenshot. Tweet that to me at Cider Chat, and you're good to go. You're entered. And that contest for Cider Swag is going to be ending on January 16th. So right now you have a really good chance, if you enter, to get some swag. And the official rules to the Cider Chat Swag contest could be found at the ciderchat.com website, and just go to the page that says swag and contest, and you can find out more about that. I hope you enter, not only just to get the review and rating, but you know, we have some nice stuff that was donated by Angry Orchard, some orchard glass and some keychains, and you know, really nice stuff from them. Your ability to get in on that is pretty darn good right now. Yes, that is the call of the wild from me to you via the loons. And got to get on at Ciderville. Got to get in on that cider swag contest. Made especially just for you. Oh, crazy times on the New Year's, isn't it? It's always crazy here in Ciderville, and that is why we love it. Now head to this chit chat with Jeff Robertson, and he is the cellar master at Castle Hill Cidery. And he said that he's from Charlotte. Well, he might be from Charlotte, but Castle Hill is in Keswick. And I just want to give you a little background. Jeff and I met after a very late night at the cider salon, and then a post little mini outdoor party with some awesome cider people that were showing up. You know, there's a bunch of us that have been involved with Cider Days in Franklin County for years. And so there was a little grouping of us that were all hanging out. And Charlie Ochowski, who's been a big part of teaching people how to ferment in this region of Massachusetts for, I don't know how many years Charlie's been around. Certainly he helped me get in on it too. You know, he's all about having outdoor fires. And I think that really probably speaks to the heart of many of us who are into cider, enjoying a good mug or a glass next to a roaring fire. And that's exactly how I kind of got to know Jeff at night. And there's a lot of bottles being passed around. So we met up the next day down in Old Deerfield at a historic building. I think I mentioned a little bit about it in this chat while I'm speaking with Jeff. And I was trying not to slur my words after a heavy night. Oh boy, cider's just so much fun, isn't it? Anyway, so he said from Charlotte, it's actually from Keswick, Virginia. There'll be info on that in the show notes. This is an amazing tale of what they're doing with these clay vessels that are buried in the ground, and they're making cider out of it. And I do believe it's time to grab a glass and join this chat with Jeff Robinson of Castle Hill Cider in Keswick, Virginia.
And this is so poetic that we're here in historic Deerfield talking about Castle Hill, because the American history and the link. So I thought it was a perfect setting mm-hmm. to be in the Beehive Room at historic Deerfield, the Deerfield Inn, to talk about it.
Yeah,
it's really lovely.
Castle Hill is an old property in Keswick, Virginia, just outside of Charlottesville. And it was founded by Sir Thomas Walker, and he became the mentor of Thomas Jefferson. So the original house was built in 1764, and the property's since been divided and shrunk down to only 600 acres now, where we have our big barn that's been converted into a cidery. So it's also a wedding venue and a very beautiful pastoral property. We also have an orchard of about 600 trees that we've planted as an experimental orchard. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to find out what we like to grow and what works well and what we like to make cider out of. So that's been an ongoing process for the last 5 or 6 years. And we're looking forward to putting in a high-density orchard next with a few of the varieties we've chosen, and try to use more of the fruit off our property.
And when you say Thomas Jefferson, we're talking about Thomas Jefferson, who is one of the founding fathers for the U.S.
Yes. We found that that area was very heavily used for apple growth, and Thomas Jefferson is a very famous cider drinker, along with John Adams and some of the other founding fathers. They were quite possibly stronger cider drinkers than even wine drinkers back in the day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a lot of notes about his cider legacy. Quite possibly our property is one of the properties where the Newtown Pippin, which is from New York City, now New York City, was brought down into Virginia, and the Queen of England took such high favor upon it that they reduced the tax on that particular apple because it was her favorite. So that area became known as the Admiral Pippin.
Admiral Pippin.
Abermarle.
Abermarle, yes.
Pippin from Admiral County.
Right.
So we make quite a few of our ciders using Admiral Pippin.
Great. Great.
Good crossover apple between dessert and cider making.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you have a range of ciders that you're making there. The cidery itself, how old is it? How long has it been
happening? We're just starting our 6th year of production. So it's relatively new. Central Virginia's experiencing a cider revival like much of the country, and certainly the Northeast is a bit ahead of us. But we have been trying to follow some of the traditions of New England and some of the British techniques of cider making, using the best fruit we can find and grow, and we're still innovating and learning as we go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you do a pretty amazing, I don't know if you'd call it innovation, because it's something that's been around for a long time, but let's talk about the cider making with the these giant clay pots. Mm. They're not called clay pots, of course.
No, they're called vevry.
Could you spell that word for us?
Well, it's translated as close as we can from Georgian to K-V-E-V-R-I, pronounced vevry, or sometimes they spell it with a Q. Q-V-E-V-R-I.
That word, is that from what language?
Georgian, I guess.
Okay.
They've traced the origins of first purposeful ferments of cider and apple wine and grape wine to the Kazakhstan region and the Republic of Georgia there now. There's a few old guys still making these vessels. They're egg-shaped, and because the energetics of the egg shape impart a very subtle but profound life force into the whatever's in it. Yeah, we imported 9 of these vessels.
You said that the vessels, the clay vessels, the Kerevri. That's a little difficult after drinking so much cider all day.
Yeah.
And being early in the morning.
Sometimes we just call them Kevri.
Kevri, okay.
Yeah. Without sticking the first V in there because it's kind of hard to pronounce.
So you were saying they're egg shaped, and they're pretty tall. You could stand in it.
Well, there's 2 different sizes that we got, and one of our big ones broke in transit, which was amazing that only one broke because they weren't very well packed. It was interesting when we received them, and
they probably came over on a boat, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they did, a container or something, and they were on in a truck, but they were just
in a
little strip of wood around them.
Just a strip of wood. I would think a huge, massive crate.
Each one was just on a pallet with like a box frame of wood around it. I mean,
wow.
It just had 4 sides and a little top piece and like little bits of rubber in between. That was it. And
do you find a lot of these? Like, if you went to the Georgia Republic, would you find a lot of these?
I guess. I mean, it's a traditional thing going back thousands of years. We traced it back 7,000 years.
For like the winemakers
purposefully
there.
Yeah, making cider and wine.
Purposely for making cider and wine.
Probably mostly wine, probably,
okay,
but I think they traced apple, the growth of that of I'm going to call it agricultural apples to that region. So I'm sure they're still doing it, and they have been for that long. I think it was a ceremonial thing. Maybe they during harvest they'd put grapes or apples and the juice in the ground, and then they wait over the course of a number of months and maybe a year, and then there was a celebration of some kind, maybe a wedding or and then they would open up and have the fermented juice in there. I'm sure it wasn't nearly as consistent as we can try to produce it now, but
so they would dig these large holes and put this at into the ground so that the cap was at ground level.
We actually did ours about 2 feet underground,
feet
below the frost line, and that way they can maintain a pretty constant temperature, and that's what the earth does for us in that regard before refrigeration of any kind.
Right.
So they knew that it would just kind of stay and hold at that temperature, and because the wild yeast and it ferments, it kills off most of the other bacteria, and you're left with alcohol and apple juice. So
it's below the frost line, so the cap must have like a little bit of a chute.
We put a chimney around it.
Chimney, right.
So it's got a big opening, and then we have another cap below. So we have 2 caps. So there's one right on the top of the cavity, and then there's one above ground level.
And so how do you cap that so that you're not getting any kind of
air
coming in?
First we tried using soapstone lids because they're really heavy, and we sealed them with beeswax, and that works, but it's really hard to undo and not easy to work with as far as getting in and out, and when you're wanting to sample or top up or anything like that. So we had some stainless lids made, and then we put a foam gasket around it, and we weigh it down with
right
now we're using sandbags, but I think I would like to find some nice soapstone blocks that I can, because they're so heavy,
right,
and place them on the lids to keep a positive seal on it so that we can do what we have to do and still be able to get in and out without it being so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we have there's ports on the top, and you can, you know, take your little vents off and get in there to take samples or top up or.
What's spark. The soil like around there? Because I imagine if you had that vessel in Virginia versus a different type of soil makeup somewhere else in the world, it could be really different, because that is going to be, it breathes.
Mm-hmm.
Clay breathes in that way.
It does. We did line the inside with beeswax, so it puts a microfilm of beeswax.
And is that the custom mm-hmm. to do that, even for the winemakers?
That's...
How much beeswax does it take to line that?
A very thin layer.
A very thin layer.
Yeah, so,
wow.
I don't know, probably 5 pounds to
5
do.
5 pounds?
To do okay. maybe all four of the
that's,
big ones.
That's not that much.
Maybe it was 10 pounds. I don't remember.
Yeah,
did it once.
I would think more. Because this is like a 200.
250, 300 gallon.
Yeah, that's pretty big. That's like a size, if I was going to equate that with like a milk tank
mm-hmm.
that people have at farms. I mean, you have 200 gallon milk tanks. That's a very thin layer of beeswax, but it doesn't absorb. The clay's not really absorbing.
It's not
the
super
beeswax.
Absorbent, no.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, it does absorb some, and then so we've gone back and redone it a couple times, but it builds up too heavily on there. So this past year, what we did was get in with a heat gun and melt it off and get a real thin layer on there and basically remove as much
wow.
as we could to just get, and that really permeates the.
Nice.
It's like a terracotta type clay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we buried ours, we actually sifted the, because it's a very clay type soil down there. And so we brought in sand and sifted the dirt and added some sand and took out all the rocks. We didn't want anything to really put
sure.
any pressure on the outside of the vessel because
mm-hmm.
they are pretty delicate. Their walls are only maybe 3/4 of an inch thick.
My goodness. Wow. Yeah. Wow, this was quite an endeavor to take on. I mean, what was the thought to say, hey, you know, the stainless steel, you know, is okay, but let's go Georgia
right.
and get these giant clay vessels. I mean, what would...
It was just
where'd that come
decision
from?
That the cider maker and the owner thought would be an interesting story, mm-hmm. basically, and also an interesting... It's very unusual for cider makers right now. As far as we know, we're the only commercial cider maker in the world doing that.
Mm-hmm.
There are some other winemakers doing it with that shape vessel. They're not necessarily using those particular vessels imported from the Republic of Georgia, but I've heard of them used in other countries and also in California, maybe even Virginia. There's a couple that are using cement ones that have been made
okay.
purposely for that.
Really different products, cement to clay. Really different.
It probably is, yeah.
Yeah, although many cisterns are made out of cement
mm-hmm.
for drinking water.
Yeah. So we're, you know, we're curious to see how this works out ongoingly. Mm-hmm. The small ones, we can do small trial batches because the four small ones are about 60 to 75 gallons each, and then the big ones are about 250 to 300. A lot of variation.
Wow, this is a whole different kind of like. Barrel aging,
mm-hmm.
but and you know you are the cellarman,
cellar master, yes,
cellar master. Okay, and the cider maker,
Stuart Madney is the ciderist right now, and the orchard manager, and or orchardist, I guess is another term for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we work closely together to produce all the ciders that we make. And the Levity is the one that we make in the Kevri in the ground, and we don't make that every year. We've made some other small experimental stuff in the Kevri as well, and this year we're hoping to try some other batches. We do a small batch of a spruce cider.
With spruce needles,
and then
from Virginia,
mm-hmm, from right on the property.
Is that a particular kind of spruce?
That's a good
question.
Because
I know people have brought in. I know a brewery that brings in spruce tips from Alaska. I'm not sure why all the way from Alaska all the way to the East Coast, but
we just use our spruce
local,
off the property. Yeah,
locavore. I love
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah, cool.
And so we have actually that product is going to be made with apples that we picked from an old orchard up on Afton Mountain at a private property that was once a big orchard, and the trees are over 100 years old, and they haven't been tended in about 40 years, so they're very organic and real wonderful fruit, mostly Admiral Pippins.
Mm-hmm.
And So we were just up picking those the other day. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. It's a really beautiful spot.
What's the tasting notes of a cider made in a kevri?
Well, I would say it lends a lot of minerality and earthiness to it. Mm-hmm. Each vessel has its own characteristics sometimes. Mm. And we often will have to lose one of them or more just because something very funky has happened and it's just a little too funky for to what we're looking for.
Although funk is kind of in now.
It is, in certain markets.
Funk and sour, sure.
Yeah, but that's not our preferred take, and a little bit goes a long way, so we keep some.
Well, any listeners hearing that who really dig funk and sour might want to check out Castle Hill and send them a line and say, hey, hold on to that. Go down there and set up something. Just saying. Just saying.
Absolutely.
You never know, right?
I hope they do come check us out.
Yeah.
And
is there any honey overtures, too, because of that
wall? No, it ferments dry, and it usually is pretty acidic, and it's got a good tartness to it with a little bit of minerality. And each batch is a little different. So,
of course.
The one right now is drinking nicely, and it's got a little malolactic, so it softens the acid a little bit more than the first year we made it. But like I say, each vessel lends its own characteristics, so we kind of blend those back together as best we can. And I'm looking forward to the next time we do a batch this year and what it turns out like.
So there will be a vintage from 2015?
It won't be Levity. It's going to be the Spruced. We call it Ancient Orchard. Spruced cider.
Ancient Orchard?
Mm-hmm. Mm,
nice name for it. And so the spruce will go. When do the spruce tips go in?
We put them in during ferment.
During ferment. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. For a certain amount of time, and then
they stay in there until we rack out of the vessel.
How do you rack out? Do you have it on a pump system that you pump into like a truck or something?
Well, yeah, we have to bring an IBC out there on a gator, and our pump comes out, and we put the hose down in there. And
what's a gator? What's a gator?
It's a six wheeled.
Oh, okay.
Vehicle, right. A farm vehicle.
Right. There's no gators in Virginia. I mean, we're talking south, but we're not talking way
not
south.
That kind of gator.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah, no, it's a John Deere, six-wheeled vehicle with a little bed on the back that you can put an IBC on.
Cool.
And then pump the juice in there. We take our CO2 out there and make sure we're keeping a lot of CO2 on it. And then we transfer it back into the cider, into the stainless tanks to blend it back together with the other, put them all together.
Mm-hmm. And where are the ciders going out to? Are these only sold at Castle Hill? I imagine you have.
We have a tasting room, and we're making 8 ciders right now, and all those are available in the tasting room, and some of the small runs we just do through our cider club, like that spruce. Generally, I don't know if we'll have enough to go outside the cider club this year. And then we have 4 in distribution that go out through Country Vintner, or now the Winebow Group, and we're distributed, I think, from Pennsylvania down to Georgia.
Okay.
So it's still mid-Atlantic, and we do use a couple different distributors, actually. I think Pennsylvania, you have to go through the state, and Georgia, we're with the Atlanta Beverage Company.
Mm-hmm. Castle Hill is also used for banquets and weddings, and
we are a big, it's a big barn that we repurposed from being a cattle barn, an auction barn. So it's a huge space, and it's only about a 20-year-old barn, and it's really pretty. And so we converted that into a event space, and so we do a lot of events, a lot of weddings. Charlottesville's actually touted to be the second busiest destination wedding spot on the East Coast,
which makes it sound like it's a really very beautiful place.
It is very pretty, very pastoral. We have miles of white fence and rolling hills, and it's horse country. So a lot of folks come back from D.C. or Richmond or even New York after they've gone to UVA and met their sweetie somewhere, and then come back and get married in Central Virginia. Nice. It's a big up-and-coming wine country as well. So it's a big business around there. So that helps us get the cidery going. Mm-hmm. So you have this side income of events business. Mm-hmm. But also makes it a little challenging for us to overlap with our space that we make the cider in, and we have our tank room, and then we have the big event space that we kind of encroach into during the week, and then we pull back into our tank room for the weekends for the events.
Well, that's great. So Virginia is quite a cider state at this point. Really,
it is.
Really happening as one of the key spots in the U.S. And I imagine there's kind of a cider trail.
There is. We have about a dozen cideries now, or a dozen people producing. A few of them are wineries that they're also producing cider. We were the third one, and that was only 6 years ago. I think the oldest one is maybe 10 years old now.
Okay.
So it's still a young but very vibrant cider-making community.
And there is a cider week, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Cider week is coming up starting the 13th of November.
Of November.
And that runs through the following weekend and the weekend after that. Events all over the state, and from D.C. down to Harrisonburg, Charlottesville, Richmond, Virginia Beach, Norfolk area, different restaurants and pairings with different cideries are going on, cider dinners and workshops. It's a fun week.
Great. For folks who are interested in finding out more about Castle Hill, we'll have links to the show notes to Castle Hill. I know you're also on Twitter, so we'll have the Twitter feed there, and I believe there's a Facebook page.
There is, yeah.
And some photos of these amazing vessels that you're fermenting cider in, it, this whole other level that I've never really thought about. It makes absolute sense because there wasn't stainless steel way back.
Right.
You know, there was glass, but way back it was always clay.
Mm-hmm.
And I could imagine what they were making many, many years ago, thousands of years ago.
Right. Well, it is challenging, but we find it's also a very green way to do it because you figure the energy inputs to make stainless steel, the energy inputs to run your chiller and all those various industrial techniques that require a lot of energy, the Kevry don't.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just a little bit of electricity to run your pump to get it out of the ground. And, of course, then you do put it back into stainless. But as far as the main part of its life before it gets in the bottle, it's spent in a very low impact
environment. I love that.
Environment.
I love that it's in the ground. That just makes absolute sense. Of course, people were doing that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have refrigeration. And to have that constant earth temperature, there's like the connection. It's as if the apple juice is going back to the root of the apple tree. And there must be some kind of symbiotic relationship. I imagine that the apple trees in the orchard are kind of swaying a little bit, saying, full circle. Here
so
we go.
Juice is back in the ground, yeah.
Really, really cool. Well, you're really pioneers here. You know, pioneers with a method of cider making that I haven't heard of. And so I imagine as it goes along, each year it's going to get more tweaked and you'll kind of be branching out. So I hope that you find all the hard work that you're doing now worthwhile on your adventure in it. And, of course, all of us who enjoy cider so much really appreciate your time and affection towards the cider.
Well, it's certainly my pleasure to do so.
I really want to encourage listeners to check out the site for Castle Hill and go down and have a taste of this, because I did have the opportunity to taste some of the ciders, and it was really amazing and really unique. It had that profile that you're talking about, that minerality, that was a really great term that you don't quite get in other ciders. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome, and hopefully you can come down and visit sometime, too.
I can't wait. You know it. I want to go down there for Cider Week, too, and make it one big, big, big trip.
Cool.
All right.
Come on.
I just love the way he just said, come on. I had to leave that in there because it's just so friendly, and there's a certain kind of Southern hospitality that is really unique in the U.S., and I really dig it. They're really great folks. I don't know if Jeff is originally from Virginia. I don't think he is, but certainly it is rubbing off on him. And that sounds just like an amazing place. I have lots of photos on ciderchat.com, the website. Just go to episode 11, Jeff Robinson, Castle Hill, Virginia, and you can find it there. And There's also some other links about this whole style of winemaking that could really be informative and maybe get you going. I'm thinking, man, wouldn't that be cool to have something buried in the ground like that? I know friends who have like cabins out in the woods, and they have buried in the ground like a barrel for keeping their food at a certain temperature, right? And actually, in the area that I live, we have these underground, what we call them, monk's caves. And nobody really knows what they're about, but you crawl into them, and there's one that's really close by, and it's in the shape of a beehive, like a round beehive. And it's all out of rocks, and four people could stand in this. And I'm about 5'8", and I could stand up fully. And it's just an amazing, amazing thing. And they don't know if this was for food storage in this area or if it was a place to hide. There's a couple of these monks' caves, and the belief is that they were made by the Native Americans in the region. And, you know, we don't really see, I'm going off on a tangent right now, we don't really see Native American artifacts in this region like you would out in the Southwest, but it is here in the New England region. And the monk's cave could have been built by different tribes back then, or it could have been built by the Celtic monks coming through, and that's why they're called monk's cave. So who knows? I mean, these traditions kind of thread throughout the world, and I think the idea of using the ground that way is pretty stinking cool. So something to think about in the world of cider making, and these folks are really going off on a different way than I never thought. Now, the main cider maker, his name is Stuart, and Stuart, I wrote to get a little bit more info about this actual process, and I was kind of curious, and I do want to mention his last name before I go further. I believe it's Stuart Madaney. It's Madany. And I was curious whether or not the top of the cider, you know, as it's fermenting away, if it got crusty or if it was like a hardcover. And he said, no, it wasn't. They actually have a pretty solid lid. They're on their third version of the lid. And this current one is a stainless steel disc, and it has a tri-clamp and a port in the center, and it has a little ring-shaped gasket. And most of the time, they have a tank vent clamped to the port with weights on the lid to seal the gasket. So it doesn't really introduce, you know, generally no air. And they might actually introduce some air early on in the fermentation and sparge it with CO2 during the maturation. So that's kind of interesting. I was just kind of curious, you know, what forms because of the clay. I don't know how that kind of worked with it. And the other thing about the Kevri is that they're using beeswax on the inside of the vessel. And I guess in the Georgia Republic, they'll also use fat on the inside for the wine. I don't think I'd really want that with the apple. I don't know, though. You think about apples and cheese, if it was like a milk product somehow. I don't know. It's just my wheels are turning on what you could do with these clay pots. It could be really neat. And that kind of mineral taste might be something that you might want with a certain profile of apple that you'd be working with to like really work with the tannins. So the future is out there, and we are on the path to find that future. A lot of info, and I'm sure in the coming years as they perfect this technique and find out what's working or not, they will be showing their wares, and we the drinkers and they the cider makers will be making the final decisions. It's just really cool stuff. So that's going to be a wrap. I'm going to get my fun party dress on to go out and have some fun for New Year's Eve and watch the sunset and be saluting to you all. And the only thing I'm going to ask of you is to share this podcast. Let people know about it. Recently, I just got a tweet in from somebody I didn't even know, and it was really nice that they shared. And let's see, who is this? The Audio Signal shared the the podcast. So thank you at the Audio Signal for even mentioning Cider Chat. That's really great. And that's the way we do it in Ciderville, by the good fortune of being who we are and for the love of the apple. Yes, yes, yes. This is Real One Color signing off. And I hope to see you soon in Ciderville. We'll be right back.